Welcome to this month's special guest interview.
This month, I'm very pleased to have Elvin and Jada Tam as my special expert guests. Elvin Tam discovered the National Circus School in Montreal and ended up crossing the globe several times as an acrobatic performer, coach, and actor, working with many circus and theatrical companies, including the renowned Cirque du Soleil. Elvin is also the author of The Art of Impossible and pioneer of AcroFit, an acrobatic system of movement designed to increase strength, precision, and flexibility. Jada Tam was born and raised in New York. After two decades of world travel, she followed an intuitive calling to awaken her inner healer. Through a multicultural blend of native ways, Jada is a yoga teacher, artist, herbalist, sacred dancer, belly dancer, fire artist, and certified art educator. She is well-versed in anthroposophy, holistic living, sustainable wildcrafting, and plant spirit healing. Good morning, Elvin and Jada, and welcome to this month's edition of Sports Nutrition Update.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So for our listeners, our team, Elva and Jada are in Lumbee, BC, of all places. And before we talk about that, first, let's talk about how you guys met, because you're very dynamic, both of you. And I can see that like attracts like. But give us a little bit of backup about how you guys joined forces and came together.
Okay, well, Alvin and I feel like our paths kept trying to cross many years before we actually really did physically connect. We were in the same countries and places at different times and never quite connected until he had come into Las Vegas to open up the amazing Ka production with Cirque du Soleil. I was already living there in Las Vegas, working as an entrepreneur through performance art. And our paths had crossed officially in Las Vegas, where he had come down for Cirque du Soleil to perform. And I was at the time running a yoga studio that was a combination of yoga and ethnic dance forms. And some Cirque du Soleil artists from the city were actually teaching different classical Indian dance and aerial dance. And we also had some static trapeze bars set up. So he was intrigued to learn. I'm going to give you my side of the story. Intrigued to learn more about the studio and this lady running the place, and followed my flyers around and had come in for a yoga class. So we actually got to officially meet. Well, I'll say he pulled up to the yoga studio. I had a motorcycle and some longer hair at the time. And it was this sort of like moment where his motorcycle helmet came off. And here's this lovely specimen of a man coming into my yoga class with his long hair. And Alvin's got quite a presence. So I was intrigued when he had come on in. And it was a small, intimate class that day. So we had an opportunity to really connect. And I got to first really meet Alvin through yoga practice, and that's really where my passion is. If I had to choose, it's so hard to choose with all the passions we have in life, but yoga's been with me for about 20 years. So it was an honor to have him on the mat and get to know him in that way, and he got to know me through the practice as well. Yeah, we hit it off. We arrived at the conclusion that even though we were very enamored with one another at that time, I was still in a relationship that wasn't going so well. So that kind of fizzled out, and about a year later, we came back together. And at that point in time, have not separated each other's sides. We've been through it all together, through thick and thin and different countries. And now we're settling down here for almost, is it over 2 years now in Lumbee? So yeah, we met down in Las Vegas, but I'm originally from New York and Alvin's originally from Edmonton. And we crossed paths in Las Vegas. So that's my answer. Although I'm sure Alvin has a different story.
I sure do. And I'll give you my shorter version of how we met. I was living in Las Vegas. And as Jada said, I had come to Las Vegas to perform with Cirque du Soleil in Ka. And I started doing yoga for the very first time. And I came across a beautiful flyer of a wonderful picture of a most beautiful yoga teacher. And I said, I have to take yoga from this girl. And it was Jada, and I went to her class, and I was absolutely enthralled with how beautiful Jada is as a yoga teacher and as a person. But what really caught my attention was while I was doing the yoga class, she recounted a very spiritual story of a self-healing that she had undergone with a shaman in Peru. And I thought, wow, not only is she beautiful, but she's deeply spiritual. And there's a lot that I could learn from her and learn with her. And like Jada said, we didn't really reconnect until about a year later when I had started a personal development company and started speaking on stage. And I had come to a conference where I was invited to speak. And I had come in just as Jada was finishing her yoga class at the conference. So it was a very fate brought us together kind of moment where we reconnected a year later and we were both ready to meet each other and have many, many adventures together.
I bet. That's great. That's wonderful. From both perspectives, Tracy and I like to share those kinds of experiences with each other and others too. Now, Lumbee, of all places, and what a contrast between that and Las Vegas, the den of thieves, the seat of iniquity, but also a lot of great entertainment and some incredible weather. We love the heat down there. So why did you choose? What's the motivation to come up here? I know you guys are doing an off-grid, sort of a natural thing. Let's talk about that. Talk about what you're doing, but why you chose this lifestyle as opposed to what some would consider to be the epitome of success living in Las Vegas and working the way you guys did.
Yeah, we ended up living in Lumbee, British Columbia, a small town of 2,000 for a few reasons, but the biggest reason was that we both internally felt a shift to find a higher quality of life. And you're right, there is that exterior appearance of living in Las Vegas that has a sheen of success. And I think we both enjoyed, you know, very good careers there. And I was a performer for many years. And then we ended up opening a yoga studio and a handstand studio and together, and we still performed and did fire performances for corporate performances. So we were still very, very active in Las Vegas. And it wasn't as if the city was fizzled out for us. Our activities were still very, very strong. Our yoga studio was very well attended still and very well liked. So everything was going well. But I think one thing that we believe in is that you just don't wait until things die out to make a change. And we felt that we needed to be proactive. And one of the reasons that we wanted to be proactive was also because our son was 5 at the time. And we questioned what kind of future he would have growing up in Las Vegas, going to a public school or any school in Las Vegas, being surrounded by that atmosphere of, you know, what is essentially a lot of greed, and there's a lot of materialism there and a lot of consumerism. And of course, there's a lot of great things about Las Vegas too, but that atmosphere is very, very pervasive there. So we decided to take a road trip, not knowing exactly where we'd end up. And we meandered through California and Oregon and made our way up to British Columbia because my parents live in Kelowna.
Which is where we got married in 08 in an apple orchard.
And we got married in Kelowna too. So we kind of ended up making this full circle back up to Kelowna to just say hello to my parents. And one of my good dear friends from many years ago, whom I worked with and started a circus camp with, lives out near Lumbee in a forest near a beautiful, beautiful river. And we decided to pay them a visit. And it was just a visit. It was not really scouting out land or a place to live. And our friend asked us, why don't you just buy some land up here? And there's 5 beautiful acres of forest right next to us. Why don't you buy that and move up here? And that kind of sparked a different paradigm for us. We thought, well, we didn't really think of living up this far.
But we were at the time seeking land. So there was a trip that we took together. I'm just going to jump in. Before this inspiration took place to come up and buy land, we had led a few different yoga retreats to Africa. We brought 18 Americans to Zambia for a yoga retreat and spent a little bit of time in the villages and got a really good understanding of how different primitive ways of living function and how it flows and how it is. And then we got on over to Indonesia and we brought 32 students on a yoga retreat to Bali and got a really good understanding of what life is like there and in some of its primitive ways as well. And really when we got to Peru for a retreat that we led a few years back, that was sort of for me the turning point. We were at a farmer's market one day, and you go to a farmer's market in the Sacred Valley of Peru and you just see the most authentic storyline of how people live with the land and these beautiful individuals coming down the mountain and gathering all of their wild food and children, and this display goes on and on for streets, and it's all local wild food. And I remember standing there at the farmer's market that day and looking around, and I was just so taken by this experience. I said to myself, now this here is regal. This is a kind of regal that I want to learn inherently. And I know it's inside us both, because Alvin and I have both had a lot of experience living in different parts of the world and teaching and sort of living in more in some primitive atmospheres even before the yoga retreats. Upstate New York in the Catskills, I lived off-grid for a short time as I trained with a flying trapeze group upstate New York, and Alvin's had some experiences in Brazil working with children on the beach and just kind of getting a good taste of just how other cultures work. And I think that coupled with coming back to Las Vegas after that experience in Peru really sparked this deep desire and need to cultivate the awareness within in our own family. And so we thought, well, let's start with land. Where are we going to buy land? And, you know, as much as Las Vegas was so good to us and so many wonderful parts and pieces down there that we could have stayed for, the Red Rock Canyon is just remarkable. It's not really a place to buy land. You know, there's this illusion of water supply, and that coupled with some other just intuitive feelings, like it was time to find this land, this bare land somewhere. So that inspired the ride, the drive up to see Alvin's folks in Kelowna. And we knew it really wasn't out in a city. We weren't going to make a parallel move. So when we did visit Alvin's dear friends, our dear friends that live near Maple Lake, we came across some opportunities for the land. So the land really spoke to us. And I think it was, for me, the Shuswap River really was this force that said, try this area, come, like you're being called, this is a good place to settle. And then we got very intrigued. And before we made any brash decision, we really needed to understand the educational piece for our child, right? So we said, well, where does he go to school? Of course, there's fantastic public schools all around, so many different opportunities to educate a family or raising a child. But we came to find, at the time, it was called Cedarbridge School. It's now called the Okanagan Waldorf School. The name just recently changed. But at the time, we found this beautiful little nook in the woods, kind of nestled between the farm and the forest. And that's when we were really inspired to a place where we said, you know, forget the land, let's come for the school, and then we'll find our land. And that's pretty much how we ended up settling now in this area in Lumbee. It's been almost 2 years, right? Over two years.
It's gone fast.
Time whisks by.
It's an excellent story. It's filled with adventure. What I pick up, because I connect with what you're saying and why you're motivated and why you did what you did, courage is what comes to mind, because there's a lot of people that would look at what you're doing and hear about what you're doing and would want to do what you're doing, but they're afraid to let go. They're afraid to lose attachment to whatever, usually stuff and people and place of familiarity. But you guys are living in the now and doing what you want. And this is what I try and teach and convey to my students, because that's where health is. That's what health is all about. It's freedom. Now, Elvin, let's talk about acrobatics, because I don't know anyone that doesn't like acrobatic entertainment. They're fabulous. I'm thinking of the Russians, the Chinese, at the highest level, absolutely exquisite. The talent, the skill, the training discipline is phenomenal. But first, why did you go into acrobatics? What is it about that sport or that you enjoy the most?
Well, I'll answer your question about why I got into acrobatics in two parts, because I'll answer in a little bit backwards. I'll tell you why I really enjoy acrobatics and why it's almost a belief. It's not just an activity I enjoy a lot, but there's a lot more that goes into acrobatics for me that reaches deep into all aspects of my life. Of course, I love doing flips. I've learned different flips on the ground, on trampoline, and aerial equipment and how to juggle. One of my other specialties was Chinese poles. So I learned how to climb a 20-foot metal pole and then slide down and do the flag, the human flag off of it. all these tricks were, of course, from a physical perspective, very challenging. It was fun to learn. It was hard at times. I got injured. I recovered. I tried again. I got injured again. I recovered and I kept going. So there was a physical challenge, of course, which I enjoyed. But as the years progressed, it's been almost 20 years now that I've been doing circus as a main profession, either performing or teaching or learning or coaching. And over the years, what became more and more apparent to me was the mental and emotional aspects of doing acrobatics. And unlike a lot of other physical activities, I found that acrobatics was different in a sense that every time I did a flip or a trick, there was an element of danger to it. And it was very apparent. Either I'm 20 feet in the air, or I'm doing a double flip off a trampoline, or I'm flying through a void doing an aerial act. And every time I was faced with that kind of danger or risk, it always put me in a state of presence. You're forced to do that because of the risk, because you need to focus, you want to focus, and it almost doesn't give you any other choice but to focus on the present. And as I did that, it was also very apparent that the other skill that I needed to cultivate and learn was how to manage fear. And that became a very principal development in the way I saw acrobatics over the years. And in the beginning, I was just throwing myself into different types of tricks because I was much younger and I enjoyed doing it and I would just try things. But I would also get injured and get hurt. And as I, you know, developed and continued to train in my acrobatics, I started to learn how to manage my fear and find different ways to not confront fear so much as use that sensation, emotion of anxiety or nervousness and transform it into something that becomes beneficial and allows me to perform the trick or the show that I'm in.
I'm thinking of Dan Millman and The Way of the Peace Warrior. Do you know him? Do you know that book?
I know the book. I read it when I was younger, and then I had the good fortune of meeting him when he came to the National Circus School in Montreal while I was training. And I really loved the book because it's a great story about, you know, it's a hero's journey, a young hero's journey into learning the arts of acrobatics and movement and all that kind of stuff. And of course, Dan Millman is an amazing trampolinist. And when he came to the National Circus School, and everybody knew of him, and what was great to see is he's not just an author writing these words. He jumped on a trampoline and started doing flips with everybody. So it was really great to meet an author who wrote a book that was extremely inspirational for me, and then see that he also walks his talk. And I think that really anchored a lot of the points that he makes in his book.
Absolutely. Yeah, you remind me of him because there's got to be something a lot more than just what meets the eye. And also The Athlete Inside, another good book that he has. Did you see the movie that they made of The Peaceful Warrior with Nick Nolte?
I saw the movie, I read Inner Athlete, and I had Peaceful Warrior. Those two books were like Bibles to me. During my training at the National Circus School, they sat next to my bed and they were references to me. Those were great books that allowed me to begin to understand the mind-body connection when I was younger. So it wasn't just a physical endeavor that I was doing 8 hours a day at the circus school. It was learning how these injuries or different moods or, you know, sensations in my body were related to emotional circumstances.
Absolutely. In terms of the actual training, give us an idea of a typical workout when you're training to get in shape to do what you do. I know that you must do more than just do the feats themselves. There's got to be backup and grunt work. Talk about that.
Well, I can summarize what our training was like in one word. And that word was spoken to me by my Russian coach. When I started my second year, I specialized in a discipline called hand-to-hand, where I worked with a partner and I would throw my partner in the air, catch her, balance her on my head, those kind of things. And there was literally one word our coach would say to us for the entire year. And we would train 2 hours a day, at least with him. And it was the word again. And that was it. Things were neither good nor bad. And there was very little advice given. It was just again. The training was extremely intense. It was all new for me because prior to entering the circus school when I was 18, I had no gymnastic background at all. So I was in shape. I was eager to learn. I had a background in martial arts. So I was coordinated. I was fairly flexible. but I didn't have any acrobatic background. So everything I tried was new. And the training was over the top. It was the first 2 weeks of training after the summer. Everybody was sore to the bone. And we would train 8 hours a day, 5 days a week for 10 months. And then the 2 months off in the summertime would be dedicated to shows or part-time performance jobs, and then back at school again. That was pretty much the regime. We would do our disciplines, and whether you were a trampolinist, or in my case, I was a hand-to-hand specialist and a Chinese pole specialist. And then there were all the general classes. So think of any kind of university or academic course. Instead of mathematics, you would have trampoline. Instead of social studies, you'd have dance class. And that's how we would rotate through the day. And we would also have conditioning class. So on top of all the physical activity we did to learn our disciplines, we'd have an hour of just straight conditioning, climbing ropes, push-ups, sit-ups, leg raises, and all that kind of stuff.
That's fantastic. That's so cool. Okay, Jada, now it's your turn. It's time for you to have a kick at the can. Now, I'm sure that you have pondered metaphysically many, many times this question. Jada, what do you do? Let's get into the physical part of what you do, because you do a lot of dance and of course, yoga. I love it. It's a fantastic practice. But can you talk about the training, the athleticism, the physicality of what you do to stay in shape and meet those conditioning standards that equate to wellness?
Well, that brings to mind something I've sort of lived by, which is this saying, consistency is key. I've had a lot of sort of swinging from one extreme to the next, like literally swinging on a flying trapeze in my earlier years. Growing up as a competitive gymnast, I've had a lot of different injuries and broken bones. And I've come across this one quote that stays with me still. I think it's a Rumi quote, light enters at the point of the wound. So I've really come to, as I'm now 40, in my journey as an athlete, I've come to really grow in leaps and bounds from those points of injury, whether it was a broken bone or a ligament torn here and there along my physical path. So yoga came into my life as actually very much cultivated from this shamanic experience I had in Costa Rica after I had a fall from the static trapeze, actually. I met one of my first shamans, and it was one of these miracle stories that take more than a half hour to tell. But in a nutshell, I experienced a real true indigenous healing through plants and intention and sacred song. And that was living and still is living in me. But when I had returned to the States with, you know, a shaman story in, you know, 1999 or whenever that was, people thought you were a little crazy. So I ended up discovering that a more practical medium to channel this, or to keep this energy alive within me, this ability to understand my inner healer and stay strong from within and share that magic, was to maybe come into the practice of yoga, which was a little bit more welcomed to people. People were ready for a yoga practice. So I actually stepped into yoga as a practitioner, and then soon after a teacher, to really look at those old wounds that come up for us. You know, it's like if we don't work it out, it's sort of like, I see the body's very similar to clay, and where there's a crack, you can really work into those places. And I found the yoga practice as being a very important tool and discipline to strengthen the inner being, right? This sort of interior self. So I think in terms of consistency and longevity, I would say yoga and for me, dance. I'm so passionate about the dance, that expressive, energetic movement. These are disciplines that I feel most people can take with them into their later years in life, whereas static trapeze, flying trapeze, and fire dancing, and maybe even the competitive gymnastics as a young child, those are a little bit more, I don't want to say short-lived, but a little bit more extreme. So when I think about the longevity and the consistency of keeping myself healthy, it's really coupled through that revisiting the practice, the yoga practice, or whether it's, you know, a lot of people really like to spend time hiking and walking. And as long as we're consistent, I think that is really the truth in the inner health and keeping that strong. The other piece too, this does tie into the herbology and working more holistically with native plants and, you know, eating off of the land. That's part of the draw we had to come up here, because we have this direct connection. Our hands are in the soil all the time. So therefore, our microbiome, our inner gut lining is, and our digestive strength is strong, because we're becoming more one with our natural environment. So that's another key piece to the health that I really focus in on. So it's not just entirely the movement, the breath, and the exhilaration. It's also the grounding into where we live and how we are sourcing our food and our water. And that's been a big drive to come and find this land and anchor and root here and learn here. So it's a delicate balance, you know. I think in life, it all comes down to that. It's always going to be about the balance. Whatever we're seeking, the balance will come forward.
Elvin, The Art of Impossible, it's a book you wrote. Why the title and what's that book about?
Well, I wrote the book, The Art of Impossible, when I was still working with Cirque du Soleil, and I had gotten together with a few friends, and we started a small company that was a personal development company. So I wrote the book, and we went out and did a few conferences and did some talks to groups of people, and it was really enjoyable. And the book is about the art of impossible. So in the circus, my experience was everything that I did in the circus at one point was completely impossible to me because, as I mentioned previously, I didn't have a background in gymnastics. So doing a backflip was impossible at one point. And then I was able to learn it and do it. And all of a sudden, doing a human flag off the pole was impossible. I saw somebody do it. I said, I'll never be able to do that. And then a few months later, I was doing it.
And what about building a house on bare land off 100% off the grid here?
And here we are.
Impossible.
Fast forward 20 years after all that training, we're building a house off raw land and it feels completely impossible to me, or it did. We're halfway through now, but I never thought I'd be able to build a house on my own. So all these things taught me, these experiences taught me that when it looks impossible, it's just a bit of an illusion. And in fact, as I take baby steps towards that goal, things do become possible. And it was really just that mindset of the art of impossible. And it's called the art because it's making an art of that experience. There's some things that are impossible. People always like to challenge me with, well, if you want to go out and jump out your window and fly, you couldn't do it. So yeah, I agree. You know, right now I couldn't be able to do it, but maybe one day, you know? So that's why it's an art. It's more of an art than a science. And
the journey is
and
the best
a journey.
Part.
Yeah, exactly. So the art kind of encompasses that sensation of, hey, just start it and enjoy the experience and you'll get there. So that's what that book was about. It was basically a summary of a lot of experiences I had in the circus, because that's where I learned that lesson. And how a lot of times when things didn't work out, it actually, there was an opportunity hidden in the problem.
Conceive, believe, and achieve. That was Napoleon Hill, right? And Arnold, too, with that vision. You have a vision, and what I get from what you're saying is that what other people say is impossible, you've decided to believe until you make the decision not to believe it anymore. And then logically, based on science, Aristotle said, evaluate reality and determine whether the thing you want to do is even actually possible in terms of physics and biology and chemistry. And so if it's not, don't even bother. It's a waste of time. But you're even saying that maybe we need more time, more technology, and then we will be able to do these things like they can say in Star Trek, like beam me up, Scotty.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I think that's a great summary of what I'm saying about the art of impossible. There's an element of science to it, and there's certainly an element of fun and play. And that's what I like to also emphasize in the book or what I teach. And when you introduce the idea of fun or play into it, it doesn't just only make the experience more enjoyable, but the element of play and the aspect of play and approaching things as a game or as a riddle to solve over a problem to knock out or get over introduces that ability of lightness or that aspect of lightness in the attitude and the way you approach things. And I think you are more creative when you see things as a game and look deliberately for the fun in things. And right now, today, in my off-grid world, my job is to install a plumbing line and I'm not having any fun with it. So I have to take my own words and my own medicine and find some fun in installing some plumbing lines deep in the ground in the muck and the mud today. So I'll do it. I'll do it. I swear, I promise. I'll take pictures and send it to you, Corey.
Yeah, but this is part of us sharpening our primitive skills, right? Like this is what we signed up for this
app. Yeah, and part of my primitive skills is a 7-ton excavator outside right now. So that's my toolkit.
Hardly primitive.
Jada, let's finish off now with a comment from you on anthroposophy. Let's talk about what that is.
Sure. Yeah, it's fairly new to me. It's something that's really drawn me in as anthroposophy radiates out out into these different branches like biodynamic farming in the medicine world, and then there's Eurythmy, and then there's Waldorf education, which is where we were really drawn to coming to this part of the region for this school. And so naturally there was this draw to find this, well, we found this lovely place where our son goes to school, and I work there a bit as well. And I wanted to open that door and really understand what anthroposophy is. And the more I learn, the more it intrigues me. It's basically a path of knowledge. And there's a lot around really what's living in the earth and how the cycle of the year really carries us and holds us through the different seasons. And it lets us learn about different aspects of ourselves. Right now, I've been paying attention to, as we're in autumn and headed into winter, there's a lot, you see the leaves are falling. So there's this natural inclination within human beings to feel like there's something also shedding within us. We're coming into a change of season, and it's an opportunity to really do some inner work and understand the self and also find the balance in that too. So it's a very holistic path, and I feel like, you know, it's a strong, healthy path for myself to raise our child. Alvin's learning a little bit as well on anthroposophy and just this sort of holistic way of living. It's a lot about rhythm and being rhythmic in our cycles, our meal times, our sleep times, and I think it really speaks to that essence of consistency. We're living in a world, in a time where it's just everything is sort of overstimulated. And so what I like about the opportunity we're on with this path of knowledge and learning through this educational path is that it's grounding us into some more of like the simple yet forgotten pieces of living as a human on the planet. You know, there's so much to learn just in the garden work itself that comes through the biodynamic farming piece, which I've just like touched the surface of. It's just endless wisdom, and it's really, it's grounding. You know, it really, it's nothing too unbelievable. You just read and you learn, okay, this is the way, you know, we came on the planet as humans, and there's a lot of forgotten pieces. So I like that it reminds me of how to be here and be with the seasons and be with the cycle of the year and the festival year. And there's a lot of magic, I feel like, in that. And it speaks to us too, because we're here learning to live on the land, and we're splitting our wood and like really living by a flame. Gosh, you know, the first year we were here, and even so now, you know, our son and myself and Alvin, we've all learned to get a fire going really quick, because we're working with that fire for warmth and for food and for, you know, mealtimes and light and just all of the nourishment the fire brings. So it gives you a deeper sense of reverence, I feel. And the more I read about anthroposophy, that's very much in alignment with my inherent self. You know, it's this sort of primitive connection to the way it is, the way we live. And we often forget, because there's lots of opportunities to just fly off the handle and be a part of the overstimulated world. And of course, that's fun too and has its place. But I think we're the strongest in our center and our balance when we find that sort of balance point and that grounding cord to, you know, come home to. So anyway, there's a lot there, but that's what I could touch on for today.
Yes, thank you very much. Reminds me of Stephen Hawking, and he didn't discover it, but he said that the theory of everything would be simple and elegant. Those two words are very important to me, and I can see they're very important to you, because you guys are experiencing that which is simple is actually complex philosophically in many, many, many ways. There's roots that take off, and it's all these kinds of directions, but it's absolutely fantastic. I want to come and see you guys. I want you guys to come over. We need to break some bread together.
Break some bread, have a fire.
Absolutely. I can't wait. www, everyone knows the triple W, .barefootsanctuary.com is where we can get to Jada and Elvin and find out more about what they're doing and why they're doing it and the different services that you guys offer. Brilliant, fantastic, incredible, excellent, great interview. Love it, love it, love it. Our time is gone. Thanks so much, you guys,
more
for making
come.
The time.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Corey. It was a pleasure to be with you.
We hope you've enjoyed the topics discussed and our special guest interview on this edition of Sports Nutrition Update. SNU is produced monthly and is distributed internationally by the Corey Hawley Institute. To learn how you can subscribe to this unique and motivational audio program, please visit CoreyHawley.com or call us toll-free in the U.S. and Canada at 1-866-433-1595. That's 1-866-433-1595. This is Scott Barrett, wishing you the very best of health and fitness for life.
Represent his lifestyle. New way of life. Listen. It's SNU. Sing along, it's true. Yo, coming through straight. Malik with sports nutrition update. Prolong your life. Live long, stay strong, for it won't be long till your time is gone. So I sing this song to pass on wisdom. Hit us up at CoreyHawley.com. Love your life, live right, things will be alright. Knowledge is key, just follow our lead. You'll see a change in heart and health, which leads to wealth and higher self-esteem. Follow your dreams and see. Follow your dreams and see.